Today, I join with Dr. Therese Rowley in an important conversation about multisensory youth. Dr. Rowley is a seasoned intuitive and intuitive business coach with a passion for supporting multisensory youth and their parents. We'll get into who these children are, how many children are being diagnosed with neurological differences, the platform Dr. Rowley is creating, and why this is all a paradigm shift to outdated thinking that has predominated in recent decades. Please join us for insights and revelations from Dr. Therese Rowley today, and we'll see you in the episode.
Are you obsessed with the mystic? Are you looking for sisterhood? Are you ready to explore your inner magic? You've arrived, sister. Welcome home. I'm Maureen Spielman, and I started this show to highlight the intuitives, healers, and other courageous women I have met along my journey. Through amazing interviews, we go deep into the mystics and uncover the ways in which you can apply the knowledge and wisdom in your own life. We are all in this together. Sharing healing and joy in community is both my passion and my purpose. Here's today's conversation.
Welcome back to Mystical Sisterhood. This is your host, Maureen Spielman, and I sit down with Dr. Therese Rowley. She is a repeat guest. I looked, Therese, and you were with us on episode 31. So in the early days, it's been almost 2 years since we sat down together in this forum, and I just want to welcome you back. Yes, and we started almost 2 years ago in that podcast in July, and we named that one The Divine Intelligence of the Children. And I have a big thread in my work of the conscious parenting. I had a background in social emotional work when that was all volunteerism, when I was a stay-at-home parent, and I'm a former speech pathologist. And I feel like that's becoming more and more relevant to me. And I love that we connected. I reached out to you because I watch what you do. And if anyone wants to know more of your background, please go back. It will not be an outdated episode 31 that's deep into the archives, because it's really relevant to all the everything you've done in the background, Therese. And I want to just encourage the listener to listen to that. But this topic that we're going to be broaching today, multisensory youth, is of the moment. And, you know, the question I guess I want to start with is, since we met, since the last podcast, I have a feeling there's been a lot going on with you. And so I don't even know if you can remember, but what's been shifting and turning in your world as to what is coming forth from within you as to the work that's really pertinent right now?
Thank you for those questions, Maureen. I've been working with businesses and leaders in conscious communities. But what's really emerged, and I've been writing about children, multisensory children. I found a paper I wrote in 2001, 1999. I said, well, I've been doing this since the 1900s. So it's really been important to me, because as I began to listen to the leaders and some of the difficulties that leaders were having, a lot of their stress was because of their children. And so many of their children being diagnosed as many different diagnoses, now it's sort of been clumped into neurodiversity. It's interesting that it's grown from ADD, ADHD, bipolar, depressed, clinically depressed, anxious. And then we went to neurodiverse and autistic, and then silent autistics and non-speaking autistic. So they've all been put together in terms of this neurodiverse kind of umbrella. And if you ask people, what does that mean? People will tell you different things. Some people say it just means autistic, and some people say it means a lot of other things. But what I noticed was that with this rise, I began to do some research and found that 1 in 6 children are diagnosed as with a neurodiverse diagnosis and a disorder. And 1 in 6 children, millions and millions of children in the world. And we are in the midst of something that is a rising phenomenon. I noticed it in the early 2000s, and it has only become more important and prominent. I see these children, and I've always seen them as our future leaders. And people say to me, well, how is that possible? Have you seen these children? Have you met them? And I say, yes, I've actually met them at the soul level, because when their parents give me their name, I'm able to look at their gifts, their strengths, their purpose, what they came to bring, and to help parents practically with how to support their child in the moment. I've looked at these children, and there's nothing there that says, oh, these are the mistakes. What really prompted me to shift in the last few months is two things. One, you mentioned yesterday in your interview with Judy Geigel, you talked about listening to the telepathy tapes. And those are really one of the prompts that enabled me to move into a platform for empowering a community for empowering parents of multisensory youth, because the telepathy tapes and their podcasts really demonstrate the hidden world of these children and talked about how the non-speaking autistic children are actually very gifted, whether it's from healing or their mediums, or they speak 12 languages, some of them ancient. And I ended up working with a gentleman named Jeremy Sickle Sykes from San Diego. And he is an artist. He's 35 years old, a non-speaking, diagnosed as a non-speaking autistic adult. And he's a tremendously beautiful artist. And he also has synesthesia. So if he sees, if he looks at you, he sees colors instead of your features. He's able to paint people's auric fields, send messages from the other side. He's tremendously brilliant. And when I look at these children, I see the dysregulation between the body and the consciousness. Mm-hmm. And they're clearly vibrating at a frequency of love and consciousness that is beyond the scope of physicalized frequency, what we define as our physical body. And so when the first time I saw him, he was so big, his light filled the room. And I said, wow, you are quite the spirit. And because in these telepathy tapes, they talk about how the researcher, Kai Dickens, is the one who's doing the tapes and has produced it, but she's working with a researcher who has been researching these children on their ability to be telepathic. And, you know, when you have those kinds of research tests, when a subject reaches 40% telepathic, it's significant. And these children, 100% of them are testing 100% on all of the tests they take for telepathy and these gifts. But what's interesting for me is that the reason that they are so gifted, it's not just that they're telepathic, it's that they actually live in the quantum field. They live in the spiritual realms. And when you are living there, you can perceive from that perspective. So the idea of healing, of speaking other languages, understanding languages that are uncommon, of being a medium, those are normal skills when you live in that frequency. And I know that because as a child, I was a mystic and I lived in that frequency and I could see and hear and understand from that place. When I was listening to the telepathy tapes, at some point I'm by myself in the car thinking, I think I'm just a speaking autistic person. I think I have all of those things that they truly understand their world. And I have nothing but admiration and compassion for.
Yeah.
So yes. Between the telepathy tapes and AI, artificial intelligence coming on as a companion in a workplace, I decided with those two resources, I could put out this platform. So that's what I've been up to and how I decided to start this project.
It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. And I love that because I was wondering, like, gosh, you know, your body of work as an adult has, you know, if you go to your website, of course, you've worked with so many different companies, you work with universities, you work, you know, a lot of different entities. And yet it's so interesting because I think, like, how did Therese get so involved with the children and her passion for it? But then that's a perfect reason of, you know, how they say, like, raison d'etre, like in French, like the reason of being is like, you remember, like, okay, I'm very similar in so many ways of living in the quantum field. I was going to say that, you know, at the top of the podcast, and you had said to me, Maureen, this is a paradigm shift. This is a paradigm shift. So what are we moving from? And if I ask, like, how much were we living in just a really constricting place of limitation? And what does this open up for families and parents?
The prevailing paradigm in almost any solution that's out there to navigate the worlds of these neurodiverse children, what I call multisensory children, is based on analyzing their behavior and dysregulation, how their behavior is different from the norm, and then clustering those behaviors so that they can be given a label that's pathologized. And then they also know what drugs might be best suited to helping them regulate and or bring their behavior back towards something that is within the social norm and something that's able for families who are doing their super parenting going on with these children, because it's not easy. All of the solutions seem to be focused on behavior. And the paradigm shift that we're making on this platform is that we believe that every child has a unique purpose and uncommon gifts. And we look through the lens of how they're processing and understanding their world rather than the behavior that's often a result of how they're processing and perceiving their world. A lot of clients have come to me and said that their child has this amazing ability to look through images, talk about images, draw images, but can't sequence. Math is hard for them. They don't quite understand it. They can't grasp it. And when I look, I see that they're perceiving through their third eye, their two eyes plus their third eye. And what they're perceiving is multidimensional realities that have a number of variables in them that cause them to be overwhelmed. So they're looking at images, and particle physics has proven mathematically that there's at least seven simultaneous realities happening. When you look through the third eye, you're able to access the information that's in that energy field beyond the physical. So when you can do that, you're literally looking at higher vibrational information. And then they try to process it. But there's no map of reality. There's no one saying, that's a stove, and you can use it to cook, and it can get hot, so don't touch it. There's no way for them to be able to, for themselves, find a map of reality that reflects what they're looking at. So they can almost get overwhelmed just in what they're seeing. And their behavior then reflects that, because it's a very frustrating thing. And plus, when you see simultaneous realities, a lot of times what happens is they are all in present time. And so there's a sense of urgency. If everything is now, then where do I ground and what do I do? And here's the behavior. And now we're going to work on the behavior instead of working on what is it that they're perceiving. Yeah. And how can we help them have agency with the volume that they're taking in and understanding what it is they're taking in, as well as understanding their gifts, their perception, and how that works. So the paradigm shift is to help parents understand the framework of saying that their child is actually perceiving through multi-senses, the five senses plus mm-hmm. extra ones. How does that work? What does that mean? What are they perceiving? And therefore, how can we help support and develop them, develop those gifts, help them understand them, help the parents understand, and then be able to support them so that they can move, we can make a bridge from their inner world to thriving in the outer world.
Thank you for all of that. What is it that draws parents to you? Like, how do they find you? And I believe that sometimes when we hear information that does not feel resonant to us from possibly a testing agency or an outer entity that is telling us how our children, or who they are, what they're capable of, and big time what their limitations are. Do you think there's something that parents know that's bigger than that, that brings them to you?
Absolutely. And that is usually what brings parents to me. And no matter what anyone says, whether they're wearing a white coat or not, a mother knows with a capital K in her heart, she knows. And so many of these parents, particularly the women, sometimes the fathers, but mostly the mothers, come and say, I know my child is gifted. I know there's something in there. They're telling me that there's something wrong with my child. There's not something wrong. There's something going on there, and I just need to get to it. I need to understand it better. And they're so clear that they want to raise this child from the standpoint of their purpose and their gifts. They just can't quite get in the inner world to understand it so they can support it in the outer world. That's mostly why people come. And then I've done a lot of talks on multisensory kids since the early 2000s, even at a Zen parenting conference, and how they're very different and their sensitivities and all of the ways that we've labeled them in their pathologies, but do not speak to what kind of gifts might result in that kind of behavior. I'm really interested in that connection between the intuitive giftedness, maybe just as we understand now that these children who are non-speaking autistic, they can now understand that the world that they live in brings to them gifts that are not common in our five senses. They're not common in our culture. And therefore, we don't know how to receive them. And it reminds me of when Christopher Columbus was sailing the seas and the Native Americans were looking out and they couldn't see the ships because they'd never seen a ship before. But they saw the waves. They saw the indentations in the waves. So they knew something was wrong. Just like these mothers, they're seeing the waves and saying, no, something's coming here. This is something big. And it's those chips. And finally, when they steer long enough, they see it. And mothers' hearts resonate. When I do readings, we have happens is that the mothers call in and they give me the name of their children. I rarely see children in person because I don't need to, because in that world, Golfi healing is obviously possible and really common. And so I just look at their name and I can see all of those characteristics and the things about them. So that's how I've read children over the years. There's been a couple of children who have asked, this is so interesting, their parents have said to them, I just had someone that prayed for you, and they might give them my name. And sometimes children will say, I want to see her in person. And they're 10 years old, they're 12 years old. And so they ask me and I say, yes, they ask for me, they know they're operating on this other telepathic level, if you will, and they know me. And one child was, he was tearing his hair out from the frustration at school. And when he came to me, he said, I don't have many friends. Only Jack is my friend. And he said, so, you know, he was feeling pretty bad about that. You know, the kids don't like me and they don't pay attention to me. And I said, so I said to him, okay, so do the other kids, do they get it? And that's all I said. Do they get it? And he's an old soul. And he looked at me, he said, no. He didn't ask what I meant. He said, no. I said, okay, then it's that you're very picky about your friends, and you should be, because you have very interesting, uncommon gifts. Mm-hmm. And so telling him that his gift I could see was about spirit. Of course, mm-hmm. he's coming from this realm and he's seeing spirit and all the dynamics he's supposed to be tuned into at this other level of what's going on in the classroom and caring about all that when you can see at that level. So I said, well, you can pray for your classmates who are angry, because anger covers sadness and that covers up fear. And so when they're angry, they're really scared. And he said, oh, so I could pray for their fear. And I said, yes. I was telling him his feet were sitting out. And I said, if you want to keep your energy to yourself, keep bring your feet together. So when you go like this, you're sending your energy out. And he said, oh, so that when I pray for those friends who of mine or the people that I don't, that are angry, I'll put my feet out so the energy will go more to them. So this is how the children are tuned in. And he was 10 years old and we're all trying to figure out why he can't get a C on his test. Mm-hmm. So it's a completely different context that we have to bring to bear, different frameworks so that we can serve them and help them develop in ways that support who they are.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so critical to disseminate this information that's coming forward, because I think with my background, even as a speech therapist, I see all the different layers, right? All the different players and layers that there are. And also how, as a parent, I just feel like the work is so valuable because it's mind blowing. It's mind opening. We all want to see our children in that highest light with their highest expression possible and not have them limited by tests and old measures. So do you see that across the board too? Because like I said, you're doing work with businesses around consciousness, and are people getting hungrier? Are they getting tired of the old ways of viewing the world? Are we all getting a little weary? Like, how are you seeing that across the board?
I think it's interesting. We're actually in the process of doing interviews and focus groups to really understand the priorities and preferences of people. And it is really interesting that even one little thing we asked them about what they thought about different words, and one was holistic. And this is interesting because we talked to some people and said, what does the word holistic mean to you? And they said, it means drug-free, non-drug, no drugs. So that idea that we're moving from this idea of drug and non-drug world, from holistic to this is the allopathic traditional way of really helping someone to fit in and to look like others so that they're not bullied. I think there's a noble reason, and it also just to regulate so that, you know, sometimes the children are hurting themselves because they're so frustrated at this frequency difference between how they see the world and where they live, which is, by the way, much faster than the human body can process. And so the parents and the teachers and the medical community are all doing the very best they can in the paradigm they've known and the map of reality that they've grown up in to keep this child safe and to keep them in good self-esteem and all of this. And there's just hasn't been a lot of other answers. So I know I applaud every parent who's ever had to navigate this. I call it super parenting, because they have to go so far above and beyond, and they're alone. So often lonely, I found they've said lonely and isolated and without resources that are holistic, and they're trying to navigate all this. So I have such compassion for this entire area of trying to help these children. And I really feel that the understanding that this is about the system, how one takes in information and processes. It has everything to, not from the standpoint of where it shows up in their brain, which is also helpful, but really to understand from a sense of what information they take in. What is that information? What's the nature of it? And how are they understanding that or processing it? I will say one thing about the non-speaking autistic, because they're called typers, because in the case of Jeremy, his mother holds a cardboard keyboard and then holds his hand. Now in the, and then he points to letters. That's how they type. And it's in tremendous amount of patience. And his mother is a best-selling author, Chantel Sickle-Sykes, and her books are amazing. She has many books, and she's worked with Temple Grandin, also, who's a PhD autistic, who is a subject of a movie on autism. But what I saw was they started taking the keyboards out of schools because they thought that the person holding their hand was guiding them to a particular answer. Mm-hmm. But what's really going on when I looked at that and I saw that is that the person who's non-speaking autistic oftentimes isn't living in their body and doesn't relate to it in any kind of way at all. And when you point to a part of the body or you touch it, it tells them to put their intention and attention to use that instrument, to put their intention and attention through it so they can then bridge from inner and outer world. But they don't, because they have no sensibility of their body, they have no connection to it because they're vibrating so high. Yes. This is the way that they can be, if you touch them in certain places, sometimes the shoulder, they know where to put their energy and therefore how to communicate differently. So I've been watching energetically what they're doing and how they're doing it. And Jeremy had written to me and said that he hoped that I would mentor their group. And because I can live in that world, they're amazing. And I feel like there's so much more we can understand when we are patient enough to know that they live in a world that most of us don't access regularly and certainly are not fluent. And if we're patient, it's like we're going to another country. We have to sit at the feet of the art and say, why are they making so many? What does that mean? I don't understand. I don't know the language. So we need to learn it. And that's where we're at, the new paradigm.
Yeah. Yeah. And with the parents, I'm thinking, I imagine their world when they start to work with you opens in a lot of ways. This is the first time they've ever had a reading, even coming for a reading. One of the prompts you had given me is like, what parents say when they come for a reading. Can you share that with us?
A lot of parents actually have had other readings with me. And so they then bring their child into it. Other people have recommendations. A lot of it is word of mouth.
Okay.
But the parents are oftentimes open because they've tried everything else.
Yes.
If they haven't had a reading and they're just like whatever else. And I have a paper I send people to prepare them for a reading to understand what I'm really doing and how is that helpful? Because I tell stories that some, I'll call them past lives, but I say, if I'm looking at that story in your field, it is not past because you are operating out of the belief systems that are in that story today. It's unfinished business. So it's not past. You're still operating. I don't read past lives for the sake of people just, isn't that nice? I was the Queen of Sheba. Isn't that lovely? And it's because it's really about where are your strengths and how does that speak to your purpose? And where are those, how are those strengths? They can, for example, someone who sews very fine lace and someone who is a wonderful surgeon has the same skill. Yeah. They apply it very differently. So those stories can be very different, but the essence of it is the same. And then where's the unfinished business where if I'm operating out of a fear, sometimes, here's what else I see. The parents and the children have chosen each other. Mm-hmm. And I then explain to the parents why that child chose them in other stories and why the parent has chosen the child. Yeah. And they resonate deeply with that because it's a very intimate. Parents know something intimately in themselves they don't say. And then when someone says it in the form of a story or just says it, they resonate and say, that's true. That's my connection with my child.
Yeah.
And that's so important.
And so they'll often find out that possibly they've done past lives together and,
right.
and played similar roles as well.
Not similar roles, often very different roles. But,
different
roles. For example, a parent might have done something with a child with their child in another life where they gave them some opportunity, but they believed in them. Let's say they were a teacher, they were an aunt or uncle, or they were a someone who came through town and noticed their skill and decided to give them an opportunity, even though others made fun of them and thought they weren't. And the child came to trust that they could have the bandwidth to allow their gifts, even though they're uncommon, to come through and shine. And so that's why they came. And the other times it would be the parents have been understood by the child and helped by the child in different ways that brought them to a higher place or a different place. And then that's how they became a person that had the bandwidth to be able to accept the child. So there's all kinds of stories that are quite fascinating, but there always is a story because there's no, I have yet, after thousands and thousands of readings, to see any time where there hasn't been a reason for people that have connected so that they can work out their, come to learn from each other. It's a teaching, learning relationship. And kids are, as all parents know, kids are the heart's teachers. Sometimes.
Absolutely.
demand the most homework from us, the most from us. They're the best teachers, right?
Yeah. So I think what you're doing is really valuable because what I'm seeing is that so many, even with newer paradigm voices that are coming through and work that's being done, there's been a separateness to it in the past. And before we started recording today, we were talking about, oh, wow, the synchronicity of all these things coming to light, like the telepathy tapes I was telling you about. Nicola Farmer, who was recently on, she just published her first book, Seeing More Than Their Eyes Can See. There's coming to the surface, but it's been, I feel like in many ways, like the services or the work was separate, but there's something unifying also happening. Is that an invitation that the energy that's pulling us forward is drawing us to?
Yeah, when you look at the world, I was saying to somebody the other day that if, when you look at those communities that feel marginalized from all of these children with neurodiversity to the LGBTQ plus the gender questions and all this, by the time you add them up, they're no longer the minority. They become the majority. And, and the critical mass is coming such that there's such a backlash that those that are not like that are saying, wait, now I'm not going to have any, no one's going to pay attention to me. So I need to scream and yell and get people to do it on, to understand me and not look at them because they know that there's an inevitable shift that is coming. The PMH Atwater has written 32 books. She's a researcher and she's interviewed children with near-death experiences because they come back with different modalities of healing. And she wanted to know about that. And she went beyond that. But this is in 2002. She said that in the 2020s, that there would, the biggest issue for the children would be gender identification. So because she said we're moving towards androgyny energetically on the planet, and that's what those children represent. So there's a way of seeing, and for some that's very far-fetched. And for others, that's, I don't know what's going on. Yeah. And for some, it's, that's my experience in my little corner of the world. So there's so many different places we can be right now with what's happening because we are in the chaos. We've moved from denial and we've moved into resistance. Then we moved to chaos. And I think we're between that resistance and chaos in these phases of transformation on the planet. And this has been a time that's been predicted since I remember in the 80s, there were Hopi Indians and I was looking at Native Americans and East Indian saints and talking all the, and they were all talking about this time. This is interesting because somebody called me the other day and said, an intuitive told me, a psychic told me that we might die of nuclear war. And what should I do? Eat more ice cream? I'm yeah, do that. Eat more ice cream. But I said, who cares? Did you know that none of us are getting out of here alive? That might be late breaking news to some, but is that, however we leave and go home, in the meantime, can we invest our focus on what we're called to in our hearts and continue to invest in that without spending too much time with our distractions and our fears? Because it just takes away from what we came to find joy in contributing. So I do think that many things are coming together. And in fact, artificial intelligence had to get to this point so that we could provide a platform we're partnering with. The platform has a community aspect of engagement for the parents so that they can talk about the stories, exchange stories in a safe space. Okay. They can find meetups the way they want to. They can even explore. Some of these parents have the most beautiful little strategies that work, like one tiny little thing they do, and it changes everything. And those parents have that wisdom. And there's going to be a place on the site where they put that. So other parents can go, here's what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. And they can access it right away, or they can have storytelling with their other parents. They'll also have access to intuitive education and frameworks so that they can understand all this. And we're going to bring forward things that will allow the children, as well as the parents, to become more adept at being at choice and have agency for how much are you taking in? Here's how you can take in less. What are you processing? Here's what that is, how you can work with that so that we can help. And the hope from what I've seen in other places is that we can help them be more balanced and regulated over time as they get more educated. And the last part is we're partnering with artificial intelligence with our own platform. It's proprietary. And what we're going to do is scrape the conversation. So whatever parents are talking about, we can make a just-in-time workshop for them as the theme. So AI will also be able to question and answer through AI on any topic. So we hope it's going to be a place where people can find each other and find a safe place to explore these other options. We'll have advisors who will also be energy aware advisors. We have holistic psychiatrists and psychologists and energy aware MDs. And so, you know, it's not that they don't know the tradition, but they understand this other important layer these children deal with every day.
And so when will the platform launch? Do you know at this point?
Right now we're in the midst of, we've just finished their pitch deck. We're in the midst of talking with, and if anyone who is your listener is a parent of a neurodiverse child, that's something that we're talking to right now, as well as special ed teachers that have had this kind of experience or people who are in independent schools. So we're still wanting to refine the offerings because we have the pitch deck done, but now it's like, let's talk about what you really want, what you'd really use. We'll do focus groups to do that. And we're also talking with angel funders right now, to fund the platform. So, but we hope by next year we will have this up and running.
It's so amazing. I have a lot running through my head. One of them, just as an aside, I really enjoy your higher perspectives that you put on YouTube. And I enjoy, I'm not a member yet, but the Wisdom Talks gatherings, because you are able to lend wisdom and insights you're getting from real-time events, I feel. And then you share them with your audience and community. But that, because you're bringing up AI, I just wanted to ask about that. And it is like from a personal place, because I am not well versed in AI. So can you give me, like, me, us, a background a little bit in how we can relate to it? It feels, as a layperson on the receiving end of so much technology, I don't know how it plays into my life. And the question mark I've had around it was, does it take away my creative nature? But help me understand, to broaden the higher perspective.
Thank you for that. And I appreciate your comments. So artificial intelligence, there's a lot of scary information out there about how they could take us over. And they're quite remarkable. We have some examples of how, if I can actually ask AI, use my voice and give me a quote about this. And it will give me, based on what, so for example, I can take, I have our AI proprietary software will be loading in all of my courses, my books and everything. So if I ask it to do something, it's only taking that from my proprietary, and then I shape it. So what I find is that it's a companion, in, it's like the fastest sorter and the most comprehensive deliverer of the question I ask. But there's been no time when I've looked at it and went, oh, that's it, I'll do it. I'll just take what it says, even if it's taking it from my work, because it's not quite my, it doesn't come from my language. But it's certainly, the reason I can even do this site is because it is going to be saving me so much time. When I have all of my courses I've taught already and I put them into AI, I can say, give me the outline of a course for a child from 5 to 10 years old that I can then edit into something that can be interactive. I can say it in the voice of a 5-year-old and it will give me that. The number of years it would take me to put this together without AI would be it would prevent me from doing it. So there's, first of all, I should say, there's very fun, easy ways. You know how when You want to know, for example, how much is a seat on Frontier Airlines that they're going to make me pay for? And I can't find it on their site. You just ask AI, what's the price of a seat on Frontier? And it'll give you it in 2 seconds. It saves you from combing through websites. It's just basic like that. And then you can go all the way from just basic questions that it will ask you that you can get answers from almost in anything. But you have to check. I always say, tell me the sources from which you got that information.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So whatever I do with AI, I always say, what are the sources of the information? Because then I can go back and double check the work, because it makes mistakes. Mm-hmm. It misquotes. It gives me some biased information. So it's going to get better and better, because right now we're in the 4.0 version or 4.5. And the gentleman who created the original form of, his name is Mustaf. I forget his last name. Anyway, he said that by 2026, everyone will have their own personal AI assistant. And it's built just for you. It knows you, it knows your habits, it knows you, and it can remind you of things and it can help you with things. So we've gone from question answering to getting to know someone by the information that you load into it, that it can also search the web for, it'll search the web for my name and it'll give me information I've said that I won't remember where I put that. Or if I need to say, give me some insights from these three philosophers that help me to understand this concept, I can go all the way to that level and it can give me some amazing things. And then I can partner with it where I talk to it and say, okay, I'm writing this, but please polish this and make this in my voice and tell me what percent of what you're saying is in my voice and where did you get the other percent? And it will tell you. So you can, it starts to become intimate partner if you
can. And I believe it too. Thank you for all of that. And because yesterday I was putting something in that was a part of a email sequence I was writing, and I put it in and I just said, can you just rewrite this? I said, rewrite this, but it didn't come out that different. So to your point, I think it sounded very much like me. And in fact, with that particular example, there weren't big differences. There were came out. I was going to ask you just my last AI question is, what do you think the future of education and AI is too? And in particular, I'm thinking of college students. And I think when it first came out, it was like, oh, this is, how do we make sure this is not being used? Is there some higher perspective there that's happening with higher education in general?
Yeah, I think with all education will change, because if you don't have to know how to, I can say, give me the percent of the present value of a loan amount and what's the yield? And I can just put it in there. I don't need my calculator. I don't need the class. I don't need. So what's going to happen is that if AI can give us this information, we have to reimagine education, not to say don't use it, but to say when you use it, here's the other skill that will be helpful in living in the way that we are going to be living. So I think that it's such a paradigm shift from what we know, that right now what we're saying is don't use it, do this, and then only use it there. But it will become so prevalent and pervasive that there won't be an opportunity to try to ignore it. The opportunity will be, how do we partner with it? And how can we move beyond that? Maybe if we have this thing doing all these calculations and we know that it can do that, and we teach people this is what it's capable of, then we say, all right, now, how do you edit a program to send a rocket to Jupiter in such a way as, you know, you make sure that all those sources are right and it looks like that? It can do that. The forest, they're using it to predict forest fires by, and they say in 5 minutes, it can be more accurate than all their teams in for a couple of weeks sitting there looking through scenarios. So we're using it and we will continue to, we need to understand our world so differently, and it will, you know, we're leading it now. It's going to start showing us if this is possible, how do we partner with it?
So my last question before I ask you what you want to leave for parting comments is, you mentioned resistance, then chaos. What comes after chaos?
Commitment.
And
what we're doing is we go from denying because we know that this is going to represent such a big change. It's overwhelming. So we move into denial. And these are phases of transformation. Then we go into resistance because we don't want to change. Once we admit we have to, then we don't want to. And we come up with all kinds of reasons we don't. And then we move into chaos because part of us says yes and part of us says no. And this is what's possible. We don't know. So the most important thing to do during the resistance phase is to give space. to allow the anger and resistance out and not to fill it with information or learning, because you can't learn when you're full and you're all full of resistance when you're in resistance. And then when you move to chaos, the most important thing to do is to begin looking for models that you know and believe in, to sort them for what makes sense to you. So it's a sorting process. Leave this out. This is why we're saying, look at what's distracting you based on fear and let that go and sort for what your heart resonates with, so you can invest your attention and intention and continue to move in that direction. And then finally, there'll be a commitment that'll say, okay, I've picked and chosen from all these different spots. This is the world I want to invest in. I know where I'm going. And that's the commitment phase before we start over again in a new wave.
Mm-hmm. I can almost see myself in all of these phases and how it's all, I feel for myself, it's all making more sense, where when you're in the middle of it, you can't really see that. And then when it really begins to, when you move to these, the committed phases, it begins to, it just feels like it's like an information highway in a way that's moving like a conduit, and you just get on it and then you just start to move with it.
And that's really why I started the YouTube channel on Higher Perspectives, because we're in it, but it's like being in the world, but not of the world. Like you have to be able to be in the milieu and the dynamics that happen in your lives, in our lives. But then we have to keep the higher perspective and to say, what's going on here at the highest level? And how can I invest in that with my heart? And how do I interpret what I'm seeing such that I don't get so caught up in present time that I'm not useful to myself and others, because I'm just going to be frazzled and worried and that sort of thing. It's really saying, let's stick to the higher perspective, especially during difficult times and chaos, because we can't see through the forest through the trees. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I just, even the name Higher Perspectives is perfect. It's funny, because I was looking at it this morning on YouTube, and isn't it amazing that name hadn't even been taken? I don't think. And like, then it's so great.
I will say that the most important thing to do during this time, and I'm happy to offer a little meditation, but is about grounding, because it's hard to figure out when things are in chaos, where we ground. Like, well, I was in this world and that's not where I am anymore, but I'm not in this world yet. And I'm in this place between places. So I'm going to feel rattled. And where do I place my feet and ground in that? How do I create healthy boundaries? And how do I make sure that I'm focused on my center instead of what's around me that can pull me out of that? And it's a dynamic thing, every day different. So those are some of the things. And community, that's the other important thing. That's why I started the membership, for people who have had readings with me, because they understand already Higher Perspective. And it's to be able to say what's going on for you and to know that others are going through the same. And it helps. Community and connection help.
Yes. Breeze, I don't know if you have time, but if you'd like to do a short meditation, I'd welcome it.
Absolutely. I'd be delighted to. And I'm going to do this meditation based on something that's been coming to me only in the last month or so in terms of grounding. What we now know is that the trees around the world are connected under the earth, and their root systems are nurturing each other. They're sending nutrients around the world. And so instead of focusing on the World Wide Web, we can focus on the World Wide Web under the ground. I'm going to do a short meditation here that invites you to ask to join that network. Because when you do that, then you're part of a worldwide network that is grounded and committed to the ground and understands sustainability in a way that most of humans don't understand or experience. So everybody would like to take a deep breath and close your eyes and get comfortable and say hello to yourself. I would say thank yourself for choosing to be born in this very interesting time, where we are moving from an entire paradigm of how we understand human to a new paradigm. And every single person's contribution is needed. So thank yourself for the courage it took to be a human and to be born at this time and to be in the situation that you're in. And then allow the crown of your head to open, and allow the light from the central sun to cascade through your body in a way that's most comfortable and comforting to you. Feeling the nurturing of your most essential self, the nurturing of the spirit, your eternal self. And as you allow it to go all the way through your body, as it gets to your arms, allow it to go down your arms. Let your hands begin to fill up that field around you 2 feet with the same light and energy. And then allow it to go all the way down to the base of your spine and down your legs and thighs, out your toes, and fill up the field below you. And as you breathe in this light from the crown of your head, you can breathe it into your heart and then exhale out the back of your heart 2 feet to claim the power that is yours, that lives behind you. And then bring in that light from the central sun through your inhale. And when it gets to your belly, send it out the front of your belly 2 feet to claim the power of that energy that you are in front of you. And notice what it's like as you fill up this field around you to claim the power of all of that in your presence. If you want to, you can make the edges of your auric field that are all around you now, just like the amniotic fluid around you when you were in vitro, that you can make it shimmer so you can see the edges of it. And notice what it's like to be nurtured and nourished inside of it through the light that's coming through the crown of your head and into this entire egg. It's yours. You might even begin to feel gravity around the edges of your shimmering auric field so that it begins to feel safe. You can find your uniqueness here, your own space. And then if you would, from the base of your spine, allow your own root system or grounding cord to move towards the earth and into it, and invite it to go deep into the earth, noticing what it's like to embrace the energy of this sustaining being, Mother Earth. And you may, as you go down, encounter the root system. It's a system of roots of the trees around the world. You might just see those, notice them, perceive them, and ask to join them if you like, to join into this network, into this connection deep in the ground, so that you too can understand from its consciousness how to stay still and clear, grounded and secure, even as what's above the ground shakes and moves. Allow this energy to inform you about your sustainability in all of this chaos and dynamics. And then breathe in that information from deep within the earth all the way up into the bottoms of your feet, the soles of your feet, which are the windows to your path, and allow that energy to go in your feet, legs, and thighs, taking with it anything that's no longer helpful for you moving forward and sending it back down into the ground where it can be composted and made into a beautiful garden somewhere else. And back down into that root system, and then allow that energy from the root system to go back up into your feet, legs, and thighs, and keep that going until you feel a sensation in your legs, which indicates that you've activated and engaged that relationship of solid ground, even in the midst of volatility above the ground. So notice how it feels to be inside of this egg with this beautiful shimmering edge of your auric field around you, the light pouring through you, and being grounded all the way to the center of the planet and into the root system. And as Mother Earth knows your true path and supports you every step of the way, and I'll ask your angels and guides to surround all of you in the days and weeks to come to allow this sense of dynamic boundary and grounding to stay with you as you go through the dynamics of your day. And I give thanks for these prayers already answered in Christ Buddha consciousness. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. So peaceful and light-filled. I know the listeners are going to love that. Therese, I want to give you just the biggest thank you for being here, just enlightening our worlds, my world. So I, you know, I get to be front and center here and just like soak it all in, which I love. Please share your website and your email. And if you have a message that's coming to you as we depart today that you'd like to share.
Yes, thank you. My website is my name, Therese Rowley, T-H-E-R-E-S-E Rowley, R-O-W-L-E-Y .com. And my email is drtrowley, D-R-T-R-O-W-L-E-Y @gmail.com. And you can get YouTube Higher Perspectives. And I want to say, one is that if there's any mothers out there who have questions about their children today, if I'll send a link to take $50 off of a 90-minute reading for you, so that hopefully you can learn more about your child. And the last thing that I want to say is, please, every one of your listeners, to honor themselves. And especially if they're mothers, this is the hardest job in the world. If you're super parenting, know that no matter what it feels like on any given day, that child chose you and you are doing more amazing work than you can ever imagine. And I just want to say thank you for that and send lots of blessings.
Thank you, Therese. We'll put the code for savings in the show notes too. Thank you so much. And thanks for the listeners to being here. I know you're walking away with so much. My heart is full. Thank you, Therese. This won't be the last time.
Thank you, Maureen. It's been such a pleasure to see you again and talk with you.
Yes. All right. We'll see you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Mystical Sisterhood. If you love what you heard, please hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. And if it's on Apple or Spotify, I would be so grateful for a 5-star rating and review. And be sure to share with a friend if you're called to do so. To learn more about my one-on-one coaching programs and join the Mystical Sisterhood community, visit MaureenSpielman.com or MysticalSisterhood.com.